Monte Cristo in Nashville. You are listening to The Smoking Section.
We are here at Casa de Monte Cristo in Nashville, Tennessee, with Grammy nominated, CMA nominated, ooh, ACM nominated, ooh, Walk Through the Fire, Kneel Down in the Pouring Rain.
Oh, come on now.
Okay. Warren Tree. Mm. How are y'all?
We are doing so good.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah? You guys have been busy. It's like trying to schedule President Obama like to get y'all for an interview.
We work 5 days a week and we don't take off on the Sabbath.
Yeah, it's curious. It's like y'all, like every time I see y'all are just somewhere else.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So what's been going on? You've been touring, you've been opening for Zach Bryan.
Yeah.
You've been opening for, I think y'all even opened for the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, man.
Yep.
Yeah.
What is life?
Stapleton.
I mean,
it's been a journey. I mean, like just to be able to open up for these different artists, you know, the mm-hmm. plethora just shows our bandwidth pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know, like Tanya and I, you know, they say it's a bad thing, like we can do all these different styles, but in our day and age, we are the epiphany of a playlist, pretty much. And you know, and it's not being arrogant, it's actually keeping it 100.
No, it actually is. You guys are like, you guys, I had a conversation about you guys yesterday.
Yeah.
You guys are, in all genre, you guys are the epitome of having your own genre, because you guys touch literally every genre in one song, in two songs. it's like you literally can get a little blues,
yeah,
and then the next one you get a little country,
yeah,
and then the next 30 seconds later, you're getting some type of rock and roll,
yeah,
all in one song. Yeah. It's like, and then let's not forget, you get a little gospel music in there.
You gotta get a little gospel music in there.
Yeah,
you
wait, you should be in our house. That's our style of love.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
So Anna, we put this out before. You know what you're hearing is just mm-hmm. the different styles mm-hmm. of our love. You know, yeah, our love. Our marriage, our relationships, sometimes it has the sacredness of gospel. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it has the heartbreak of blues.
Yeah, the quietness of classical.
The jazziness of jazz. I mean, I echo the same sentiments of the ancestors, like Duke Ellington when he says, don't generalize me.
Yeah.
I make music. I'm a slave to music. I'm a mm-hmm. servant of music. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, you know, I'm not bound by mm-hmm. any chains of genre. Like, what I do is what I feel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the same sentiment that Ty and I carry, you know. Now, for business purposes, I believe that it's very important to identify what kind of artist you are.
Mm.
And I think this is very important because we did not set out to be, excuse me, any certain particular kind of artist. But through the years, a community gravitated towards us and pulled us in.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is country music,
mm-hmm.
Americana.
Yeah.
You know, and we found a home. We found an island that exists that allows us to be ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to say, yeah, we are a country music artist, but here's how we feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Here's the interpretation. Go ahead, baby, I'm sorry.
And there's there's always the, how can I say it? You're always thinking about if you should do it different.
Mm.
You know, because so many artists, I think it's great, they have one lane, and you see that one lane working, and they stay in that lane. Mm-hmm. So you may, you know, when we're doing songs or when we're doing a record, we'll question it, you know. Should we do a record that's more like, define like this, and then you look at each other and we're like, no, it's not gonna work.
It's not gonna work.
Because
it's...
when we go and do a live show, we can't present that or give our fans the kind of show that they want, you know, because at the end of the day, it's always about.
So the first time I saw you guys live was Pilgrims Festival last year.
Oh.
We're not gonna tell about what happened. Someone was a little late.
It was so hot.
It was so hot.
In the sun.
Oh.
Blame it on the sun.
Oh, if I had ran any faster, I probably would have passed out.
We were just happy that it was you.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Yeah. Like, oh, no. Another one.
Yeah.
Yes.
More of us.
There's more of us back here.
That's so funny.
Oh, but that was the first time I saw you guys. And, like, I listened to you guys beforehand.
Yeah.
And it was one of those where it's like, okay, I get it. I get it. I get the music. Like, you're insanely talented. Understandable. Then I saw y'all on stage.
Yeah.
And you have to bleep this out, but I literally was like, holy shit. Like, now I get it. These are stars. These are not just talented black artists. These are stars on stage. And then you look at the crowd, and the crowd is at Pilgrim Fest was predominantly white.
Yeah.
And you look and you're like, they are rocking. They are into, like, they are listening to this music and having their faces blown off, and they're like, oh.
Yeah. I think that's the spirit of of where we are in music.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, as an artist, when you're a black artist, you think that people that don't look like you react in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to put yourself in, a lot of people try to put themselves in the box
right.
to fit. But that in itself is another ism, because you can't judge another person either because of what they look like and what you think they'll receive because of what's coming out of you.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you a question though, baby?
Yeah.
If you don't mind me asking. I think one of the things that we haven't been honest with ourselves as a race, meaning the human race, is we're taught certain pseudo facts about one another, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we're coming up, you know, we don't even recognize how segregated life is.
That's true.
Like, for instance, Sunday morning is the most segregated place.
Yeah.
In the day of our week, right? Mm-hmm. So you got black Baptists, white Baptists.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are singing in a black Baptist church, it is not fitting to get up and do a song by Larnell Harris or Alvin Slaughter or Sandy Petty or Helen Baylor even so much.
Yeah.
You know, it's not fitting. In fact, they'll sit on you.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go to a white Baptist church, it's not fitting to do Yolanda Adams or Kirk Franklin or something of that nature during the 90s, how we were growing up. And we were taught, you know, you don't need to do all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're taught, it don't take all that.
Mm-hmm.
So what we end up becoming is the antithesis of those ideals, right?
Those ideals, exactly. I mean, and to piggyback off of that, it's kind of taught in school. When you're sitting in the lunch cafeteria and you see that all the blacks are sitting at one table, all the skaters are sitting at another table, there's different kinds.
Yeah.
It's taught. I don't think it's purposely.
It's unintentional.
You know
the fruits.
Yes.
And you click up. But what I'm learning today is this. I think that we have an opportunity to be honest about that and to say, look, I was taught that, but in my adulthood, what I've learned is that's just absolutely not true.
It's not true.
Right.
And then you grow up, because I grew up in a black Hispanic household. Mm-hmm. My mother was from Panama.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew
My grandma's from Panama.
Really?
Yes.
We're related.
You actually might be.
Yeah,
we might be.
Are you serious?
Uh-huh. My grandma's from Panama, and my great-grandma's from Costa Rica.
That's where my grandmother was from.
Really?
My grandmother was from Costa Rica. And her family was from Peru, and then my grandfather was Jamaican, and they moved to Panama because of the canal. So that's how.
I got it. We might be. Ooh.
You might need to do some research.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you grow up and you listen to
Yes.
All these
I listen
things.
To everything. Yeah. So it's like I grew up listening to gospel. I grew up listening to R&B, hip hop. I grew up listening to even back when it was like Kenny, we would listen to Kenny G. We would listen to, what's his name, On My Own,
Michael McDonald.
Tears for Fears.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those names.
Like,
yeah.
We would, like, listen to all those. So it's like, I had a wide range, Sade. I had a wide range of music growing up. I didn't listen to country music until I was 15.
Yeah.
You know? And I moved out into the boondocks, but that's how it was in our household.
Yeah.
You know,
and you didn't know the difference.
And you know the difference. You didn't know the difference.
Duran Duran was no different than Tina Turner. Was no different than New Edition.
It was all on the same radio station.
Yeah.
Well, also the creatives were the same. That's so true. There's a reason why, because you know, I mean, think about this. When you look at the periods, because we're talking about periods. Everybody dressed the same. Everybody lived predominantly the same and had the same kind of styles. That's you know, true. I mean, it, just being
that's
honest.
True.
I mean,
the go back in the phase in the 90s. Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're talking about people that look like us. Yeah. Now, if you travel on the other side, it was very similar for that. You know, like I talked to like a bunch of people who didn't grow up like me, who don't look like me. And you put like 10 of them in the room, and their similarities of how they were raised are very strong.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I have a buddy in the military, and I was showing him all the songs that I showed him. You know, songs that are really country-leaning and country radio-based. But then I get to, like, a song that we have called Set My Soul on Fire. Mm-hmm. And this is a straight-up redneck white guy. I mean, he's, like, spitting and talking to him. And I'll never give him chewing. He was chewing tobacco in Iraq. And I was like, man, let me try that for the first time. And he's just chewing it like he's chewing gum. He's spitting in his little coat pouch. And it just looks so cool, and I wanted to try it. And I was like, wow. I didn't understand what
it
was.
I threw right
in. Oh, my God.
See, I grew up seeing that.
But
I tried to dip.
Yes, the dip.
I tried to dip. I didn't try the actual.
School.
Yeah.
But school. But what I'm getting at is, he's like, Trotter, can you play that Set My Soul? And he was just, look at the horns. And I asked him, I said, man, you're acting like this is your first time hearing it. He's like, bro, I never heard nothing like this before in my life. I wasn't raised on it.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
I wasn't allowed to listen to even certain things. Like, he wasn't even allowed, you know, it was rebellious for him to listen to rap. It was like a rites of passage for us to listen
correct.
To it.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's true.
So I think that what we have to do is number one, what we have to do is be okay with the differences.
Yes.
But what comes right behind that is be okay with the change. People wanna try new things. They wanna hear new things.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen careers die because of them trying to experiment with music.
That's so true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
You know, because their fan base is so used to one sound from them.
Yeah.
And then they want to evolve and they try to do another something different.
Yeah.
And
they're like, I don't want that.
And it tanks.
I caught myself doing that with an artist, I won't say.
Yeah.
But I absolutely had the biggest like crush on them in the 90s. In the 2000s, I was like, oh my God. And when it was said that this person was coming back out with a record, I was like, oh my God, this is great. And then when I went and got it, I was like, what in the world is this? And I said it to Michael, I was like, I don't want to hear such and such and such doing that.
Mm-mm.
But I think that's wrong because you have to allow, just like we allow people to grow and change careers and stuff like that, you have to allow the artists to grow and to change and to experiment. You know, the same person you loved at 20 is not the person that they are at 50 years old. You know what I mean?
Yep.
They're not gonna be a 50-year-old rapper talking about the same stuff they were talking about.
Going to college and things.
You know what I mean? So it's very different.
It's crazy because I think Christian Bush from Sugarland said the best. It's like, what is music if you can't experiment?
I love him.
So do I.
Christian Bush is one of those guys where you're not going to tell him he's not going to experiment.
No,
we've been in the studio together.
That's true.
Yeah. I remember at CMAs, I was watching on TV some years ago. I want to say 2013, maybe. I could be wrong. 2014. But I saw Thomas Rhett. He had a song where he's performing and he had like a varsity kind of jacket on and he was walking in the audience, but he had like a marching band and horns, and this is country music. He's going for it. And the audience was just kind of like looking at him like, is it okay to like this?
Yeah.
you know, when have we become a race to where we have to ask for permission to enjoy?
Correct.
Permission to like something, even if it doesn't come in the same kind of wrapping.
Yeah.
It's like, am I allowed to enjoy this? Am I allowed to like this? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that we have to check ourselves on that. Mm-hmm. This is the one religious thing I will say. In this genre, in country music, we hold true and we promote the love of God. But this is a God who does not want robots. It is said that this God wants free will. He has implemented that in the human experience, in the human nature, in the human spirit, to have freedom to choose.
Uh-huh.
Even to choose whether you believe or like or love God.
Right.
So are we really after the heart of God if we decide not to have choice? And we have to be careful because we're now traveling into a zone where we hate the other's choice, whether it's in music, love, religion, automobile industry, politics.
Uh-huh.
We've become a race that says, if you like what I like, but if you don't, I don't just dislike.
I hate you
with a visceral hate.
Yeah.
And that's a problem to me.
Yeah, because it's where did the generation of understanding go? Where did that go? Because it's like. It's one of those where it's like you listen to argue or you listen to understand, and we automatically go to listening to argue.
Or are you listening to listen? Because if you have a thought before the person finishes, you're not listening.
Yeah.
We've learned that in our marriage.
Yeah.
Like I've said to Tanya several times, I have the intention to sit and actually listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to say to me? And if she's going, I'm like, then you're like, you just lied. You don't. Your intention is not. Your intention is to defend.
Yeah.
But what we've learned to do, you know, and I feel like Tanya will correct me if I'm wrong. I love to listen. I actually love to sit there and not just listen, but to ingest what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love to go, think about it. And then I love to come back and go, you remember when you said this? You are absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For saying that. Mm-hmm. And how you feel matters, you know. But you asked a question, in the business, how many times have we heard in country music?
Mm-hmm.
You know why so many songs get rejected for radio? It's because the country music industry has decided that they can make profit off of Bubba. And you know who Bubba is? An absent-minded fool.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to expose that.
Mm-hmm.
Because people ask the question, whether you believe or whether you're a Republican or not, how did Donald Trump become president? They ask these questions. Well, his team has decided that there are no Bubbas.
Mm-hmm.
They're not dumb. They're not stupid. They're not absent-minded. So what if they chew straw? So what if they're farmers? So what if they aren't even nowhere near his tax bracket?
Mm-hmm.
They've got a voice and they've got a choice. And you can laugh if they're missing teeth. You can laugh if they're wearing straw hats and overalls, whatever. You can do whatever. And you can sum them up as Bubba. You can have a picture of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and predominantly, the industry calls it Bubba. Most people recognize it as a redneck. In fact, in the Webster Dictionary, redneck is considered an absent-minded white male who lacks moral judgment.
That I had no idea.
Webster.
I had to study this because the reason I studied this is because this is a genre that we're part of that is actually trying to change its narrative towards black people.
Correct.
But what I'm now discovering is it's not just black people that the narratives have to change. we have to understand that globally, redneck does not mean the same as it means in this country.
Correct.
This country, redneck is considered, you know, I shotgun beers or I go fishing and I'm redneck chewing back and spitting and all these things. And our famous artists like Blake Shelton, Lainey Wilson, Luke Combs, they celebrate redneck culture, but they don't understand that. But when you try to become a global artist, that term means something completely different.
Yeah.
So they associate redneck with racism. They associate redneck with absent-minded white males who lack moral judgment. So now we've got a bigger, deeper problem, because what we have to do is realize, number one, no, Bubba isn't dumb.
Yeah.
Bubba, in fact, the person you are claiming to be Bubba, who doesn't understand certain kinds of music, well, guess what? My grandfather was Bubba.
It's a lifestyle. And I think that's where, that I agree with you, that is where the misconception of everything comes in. Comes into play.
Completely.
Because it is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like I lived out in the boondocks. That's what it is. It's a lifestyle that it is when you're out there and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
And we can do better.
We can do better by labeling it.
Yeah, and it's the same if you go across the lines and you go to other countries as a person.
Correct.
Of color.
Correct.
They don't.
Yes.
The stuff that we call ourselves over here, they're like, "Why are you doing?
Why are you doing that?
Why would you call yourself that? You know what I mean? That's degrading. But you're selling millions of records in America, holding the bloodstained banner for
exactly.
And also, I was just talking to my girlfriend about this the other day.
Deep.
There are many kinds of people.
Getting deep in here.
There are black people who grew up in urban communities. There are black people who grew up in the hood. There are middle class black people. There are white. There are black people who grew up equestrian riding. So when you go overseas and the music industry has given us a face that we are only one kind of black person, and someone walks up to you and they're like, "Hey, girl," and you're like, "Well, I didn't grow up with that. I grew up." Very different.
Very different.
You know what I mean? So there it is again, where it was stereotypes. And as Michael's talking about with Bubba, you can't put a label on
some
people. You just can't.
You really can't.
Just because of what you think.
And it's hurtful. It is.
It's
hurtful. We have to, you know, there's many sayings out there, you know, make America this and that, but I think we need to make ourselves great again. I think what we need to do is we need to get back to some basics that we teach our children from kindergarten is to be kind, be nice, be kind, be caring, show compassion. And the number one rule, if you're going to claim to love God, is this. He says, love thy neighbor as thyself.
Exactly. I am so kind to so many people. Because it's like, I don't want them to lay down that line. Treat me or treat someone else that I know the way that I don't want to be treated.
Karma.
Oh.
It's real.
Karma is real.
Karma is real.
It's very
real. Coast Carmel. Which I actually love.
It's very real.
Let's go, Marcus. What's up?
Since we on this subject.
Okay.
Since we on this
subject.
Let's
go, baby.
I would be crazy not to bring up the cotton plant incident.
Okay. Understood.
So, I don't know if you noticed, your husband over here texted me the very next day.
I did not know that.
And we had some words for each other.
Okay.
He was highly pissed off, and so was I. So, for those of you who don't know what happened, they were at a festival in Austin, Texas, and in their dressing room, when they walked to the dressing room, it was in no one else's dressing room, there was a cotton plant.
Yeah.
Now, we all know through our history.
Yeah.
What that means. I know his reaction. What was your reaction on it?
I did not react. In my initial first response wasn't to react. I grew up, my grandfather in New Bern, North Carolina, grandparents, we were just told not to go across the tracks. I didn't know what that was until I went to a historic black college. and found out why you don't go across those tracks. So I wasn't educated in what that meant. They had cotton farm down there. Mm-hmm. We picked cotton. I mean, it sounds like it's far removed, but we had tobacco farm, cotton, corn, all that stuff. I didn't initially react. And then I thought about where I was. And I was like, we're in Austin, Texas. It's probably about 120 miles. It's a dark town. They call it it's a town that what they used to say where blacks don't go when it's a sundown.
Yes, yes.
And so it started to register to me that, oh, we are about 120 miles from a sundown town. And this is happening. And my first thing was to watch Michael because, of course, his first thing is safety, coming from the military and all this thing like that. I'm like, this could go one or two ways. Because initially he was like, we're going to get out of here right now. And so I stayed calm in all of it because if I escalated it, it could have gone completely different. And immediately I started to not feel safe. You know, my son was there.
Yeah.
But my first reaction wasn't one of, oh my God, get that cotton plant out of here. Because our music director saw it first. And he's white.
So he didn't even...
We walked in. I didn't even, to be honest with you, I didn't see it right away. But when he brought it to my attention, I was like... So I got my phone. I have an app on my phone that tells you what kind of plant it is. Because I just didn't want to... So I went to plant identifier. I was like...
Wait a minute, I'm gonna take a picture of this plant.
I said, as many forms of cotton here. So I thought it was a different kind of plant that resembles, but it wasn't. And once I realized it wasn't, I was like, wow. We've never spoken about the stuff that's happened to us out on the road. We've never talked about the racism that we face out on the road. And now we had to.
Yeah,
it was that thing. We had to say something.
It's crazy because it's like, it forced your hand.
Yes.
It forced your hand.
Yes, it did.
And I'm in a way glad that it did force your hand because I feel like people are naive at that and they don't really know what happens.
It was a relief.
Yes.
I can be honest with you.
Yeah.
It was finally a relief to say. That here we are, the band that's always singing about love, that's always talking about unity, that's always holding up the bloodstained banner of that's togetherness. We don't see the isms. And finally, people heard us say, this happens to us too. And I think there was a sense of relief for people that look like us.
Yes.
And for people that don't look like us, it was a sense of, wow, I'm so sorry that this happened to you. And
well, then
I was going to say that there were some that were like, well, don't you wear cotton shirts?
Not correcting you, I was just adding.
I mean, there's some people, and so it forced me to say, okay, so what part of this are you going to pay attention to?
Yeah.
Well, pay attention to all of it.
Can I say this about that? In all that get an understanding, right? What I've understood is this. You have the humanity of you has to look at even that response. Well, don't you wear cotton shirts and stuff? And that response is an ignorant response, not as ignorant as in abasing the individual, saying you fool, but ignorant as to say our country has a history problem. We are very good at saying ouch. But we are not good at saying what I learned from the ouch. So it's white America. It's so hard for white Americans today to hear the history of a black American today. Because what we want to quickly do is say, yeah, but that was then. What's happening now? And we have fewer cases where black bodies are swinging from a tree. We have fewer cases, you know, than the 60s did. You know, if we're being completely honest, yes. But a prime example, and not to put anyone on the spot, but for my white brothers and sisters in here, do you all know what a green book is?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
You've heard of it.
I saw the movie about it.
But until then, had you ever heard of it?
No.
See, you know that it was a dangerous time, but you don't know what Black communities decide to do to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. Because if you know that, then you know how to aid to protection. So then you don't, you won't, if you knew, you know, that, hey, there's a sundown town. Mm-hmm. And what Black parents are telling their children and their cousins and their relatives is, it's not safe for you to go, even though this is our country, even though this is our home, this is our town, it's not safe for you to leave and go that road. Now, and we're not acknowledging something else. White America, white Americans also have sundown. During the Freddie Gray trial, we lived in Baltimore, Maryland, and me and my cello player, who was a white guy named Tillman Benham at the time, we were walking downtown Baltimore to go get a sandwich. And some of my brothers jumped out of the alley and were getting ready to attack Tillman. They were angry at white America because the police officers and Freddie Gray, and they were just angry, and they had nowhere to take that anger, and they were going to just beat every white individual that they saw. And I had to stand in front of him and say, not the way, bro, not the way. Even I also had to go, listen, if you fight him, that means you're fighting me. And that's not gonna go good for you either, because I will beat your ass. No, I'm just keeping it 100. I had to take those precautions. I'm sorry for cursing, but I had to protect him. He's so green, he had no idea where he was at.
Right.
Yeah.
I had to let him know. Here's why.
Yeah.
And we had to talk about it. And that's the key. The key is tell the full experience, not just the experience of the, or the moment that benefited you. So here's the full account of the cotton thing in a quick situation. We saw it. I investigated amongst other counterparts, and we were only Black act there. I went and asked other white acts who were there if they had this plan, because I wanted to make sure that maybe it's a decorative piece.
Right.
They did not have that in there. And then it turned from that to a little bit of, now you all picked this dressing room for us. Somebody on your staff had to have known that, hey, this decorative piece that came with this trailer, it might set them off, or it might remind them of a period where it's not safe for them. And then we had to go and perform in front of a predominant white base. And again, now for the three of us, I will say this. History has done a poor job with identifying hate. It sums it up. If he's a white male, it's more than likely facing off, he's gonna be facing off with you. It really doesn't dig into the historical dangers of the white female. It really deals with the white men, because white men in that period who had those beliefs led that charge. Nonetheless, when I'm standing on that stage with my beautiful wife and I'm looking out into that audience and with the cotton on my mind and it's 107 degrees. Jeez. I'm just trying to hurry up and get
And not only that,
my 12-year-old son is in that trailer by himself.
Yeah.
He's playing his game, but I don't know why this is here. I'm afraid there's no accountability.
Right.
So we spoke with the festival. They allowed us to leave after we performed. And then we got on a phone call. And we received all the I'm sorry's. We received the apologies. We did. And we talked. They allowed us to say, well, listen, it's not about the cotton plant. It's about what it meant to us.
Yeah, how it made us feel.
Exactly.
Because I think that's what people don't get. It doesn't matter if I'm wearing a cotton shirt. If you tell me, if I walk on your toe and I don't step on it real hard and you say this hurts and I say, well, I didn't step on it that hard, I'm denying how you feel.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I have to take accountability for
exactly.
me stepping on your foot first and not think about the level of pain I caused.
Right.
Because I stepped on your foot.
Right.
You know,
and we're talking about two different things.
Exactly.
We're not talking about, no one picked cotton t-shirts.
Yeah.
No one picked cotton underwear. Yeah. No one was, while they were picking it, no one was being flogged and beaten. You know, it is the same as if there was a noose.
Mm-hmm.
In our dressing room, it would be that same reaction.
Right.
But it is not something we can't get past.
Yeah. Right.
It is not something that we all at the table can't learn from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to hear
mm-hmm.
what offended,
mm-hmm.
how did it make you feel?
Yeah.
And how do I make you feel different?
That's mm-hmm.
how do I make you feel better about this?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, again, and we appeal to the nature of our country to where we agree.
Mm-hmm.
We agree that this country needs to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
This country needs to feel safe for everybody that belongs here. It needs to feel safe for its citizens. It needs mm-hmm. to feel safe for you, me, and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there's some conversations that need to be had.
Yeah.
Some real ones.
Yeah.
You know, without arguing, without,
yeah.
you know, going off and saying, no, you didn't hear,
yeah.
you know, in the pandemic, I said this about George Floyd, and I'll quickly move on from this. I said, here's the thing. Truth has to prevail. Truth has to abide. And now here's the truth. The truth is, if you are a white male or female, or a white person who identifies as something, here's what you have to do. When you are hearing the cries of a black male or female or a black person that identifies as something, you have to listen without the ears of guilt.
Yeah. Yeah.
You weren't even born.
Yeah.
You don't know anything.
Yep.
So what you need to do is you need to listen, replace that guilt with compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Replace that guilt with understanding. Replace that guilt with love for the person that's telling you, that's feeling safe enough to say, I don't feel safe.
Yeah,
and here's why. Get rid of the guilt, baby, and pick up the empathy,
mm-hmm. yeah.
compassion.
That's right.
But as African Americans, black people, what we have to do is we have to actually talk to ourselves and say, what do I want?
Mm-hmm.
Am I masking justice, but behind it, is it revenge? Because I can tell you now, there are so many black people I talk to that says white America cannot understand until their white children are hanging from trees. Well, listen, if you believe that, then what you don't want is justice.
Correct.
You want revenge.
Revenge, yeah.
And we've got to be honest with that, too.
Mm-hmm.
If it's revenge you want,
mm-hmm.
understand it. It's okay. It ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that's not humane.
Correct.
It's not going to happen because we have to live and exist. And people say, well, we got to share this planet. No, we don't. We are the planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got to love one another.
Correct.
And this is our history.
Yeah.
You know, it's if I have to learn about George Washington,
mm-hmm.
then you have to learn about this.
Mm-hmm.
I have to know about Indian culture.
Mm-hmm.
I have to know about anybody. This is probably the America, not the only country, but in large, the top country where immigrants come from everywhere.
Yep.
And they become something great.
Mm-hmm.
You can take an immigrant, move here, and 10 years later, they're billionaires.
Yep.
There's no other country in the world
yep.
you can do that in, and they have to figure out how to all live together.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have immigrants working in our house right now. Half of them don't speak English. So guess who has to pick up the Spanish from grandma that you didn't pick up?
You didn't pick
up
exactly.
You better get that Google translation.
They are legal.
They're legal, but you better get that Google translation. You know?
You must say that.
Yeah,
they're legal.
And so I get my phone, mm-hmm. and I let them talk into it, and mm-hmm. I see what they're saying, and I talk back into it, and now I'm learning Spanish,
mm-hmm.
and they're learning English, and this is the country we live in, whether it's Italians, whether it's Caribbean.
It's a big melting
yes.
pot. And Nashville's like that.
Yeah.
Nashville's a big melting
is
pot.
It? I haven't seen it.
I mean,
well, to
maybe
be fair,
I don't go out.
Depending.
I gotta get out.
You gotta get out work. You gotta get out work.
Yeah.
You gotta get out work.
I invite you out tonight.
You wanna go square? What?
You gonna square dancing?
He knows. This one here.
Where you going square dancing at? Nashville Palace?
Come on, baby.
Oh, I might slap on that one.
Is there any other one?
He wants a cowboy head on his butt.
Oh, I might.
I can't.
I can't
do it.
What?
I mean, getting
you,
back.
You might have to teach me some things. I might have to go with you.
I'm there like two left feet.
I can't
go tonight because I got reprimanded because we got to leave and we got a big day tomorrow. But
leaving again? Y'all just got back in town.
Yeah.
We've been home for.
But to wrap up that, the company agreed and they put in some policies. For their staff and for their company that they're implementing some trainings so that they can understand.
They can understand.
So that they do see
it's definitely, that's where it comes where I said, where's a sense of understanding?
Yes.
Because there's a lot of people who just don't understand.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And that's where it comes, comes where it's like, okay, now it's time to listen, to learn.
Mm-hmm. I do that with my daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, I do that when I listen to, like, the rap I grew up on is completely different than the rap I'm listening to.
Completely.
So I asked my son, I'm like, what do you find?
Is it just the rap? The music, period.
I grew up where if you call, who you calling a B, I mean, we had Queen Latifah going off.
Yeah.
You and I, Latifah.
Exactly.
And now it's like, that's what they call each other. So I'm like, but you have to adapt and understand.
We fought for these rights to not be called these, and here we are calling them.
Now it's the term of endearment.
We live amongst this now.
Yeah. So I'm going to bring this up because we've done this before, and I've talked to you before about this, but a lot's changed since we talked to you before about it.
Yeah.
For those of you in the room who don't know, she was part of Sister Act 2.
Oh, yeah.
So, are you going to be part of Sister Act 3?
Well, it seems like yes. I mean, the writer was there when we did the...
We needed the view.
And so, I don't know. We shall see.
Ooh, I just got chills.
Brother, I've been living in chills.
Bro, I just got chills.
You just never know. You know, it's. I stopped putting on in my head what I want to see happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when we first started, I was telling somebody, we had this great business plan and all the things I wanted to see happen and, you know, for the war and tree. And then we got into it and it just evolved into so much more. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's going to happen, you know, if in fact I will be in the film, but it'll be
great. I want to see it happen.
I want to see it happen.
That's manifesting right here.
We're manifesting.
Yeah. Well, you're the queen of manifesting.
I think it's gonna happen. I am, as I told you before, I'm a huge fan of Stack, of the whole.
Did you see the reunion?
I did.
You did?
I didn't see it live, but I rewatched it because I didn't know what's happening. I rewatched it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And let me tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real talk.
It was.
Yeah.
You couldn't have done a better reunion.
It was.
You could have done a better reunion. Like, it was so perfect.
Yeah.
You could have done one better.
There was so much joy.
Yeah.
In that room.
Yeah.
And even now, they're like texting me. We have a thread with everybody. Mm-hmm. So the people who didn't make it are on the Sister Act 2 thread. So you have, which I didn't know today, like Jennifer Love Hewitt, all these people are in our text messages every day. So it feels like the brothers and sisters you haven't talked to in years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really incredible.
So, Love Like Whiskey. Are we allowed to talk about that? Are we allowed to talk about it?
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
When's it going to radio?
Well, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
Is that your jam?
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you this because I haven't played it for anyone else, but I describe the feeling that I had for the song.
Mm.
And the feeling I had for the song, if you remember Keith Urban and Pink's songs, One Too Many.
Yeah.
That was the feeling as far as like the positivity, the happiness, the joyfulness of that song was the feeling I had when I heard Love Like Whiskey.
I wrote something for you about that song. And because I knew this would come up because of our conversation.
Correct.
So, and I just want to read it. I haven't even read it to my baby, but
look at that.
So I want to give you a little bit of how that song came to be.
Yes.
Because we didn't talk about that.
Correct.
Okay, so we got a 2021. We got a phone call from Mary Hilliard.
Yes.
Who is Dierks Bentley's manager.
Correct.
And Mary said, Dierks Bentley's looking for you. He's doing a special performance at the ACMs. Mm-hmm. We're still in pandemic mode. Mm-hmm. But Dirks was going to go and perform inside of Station Inn.
Right.
The owner had just passed away, who was very instrumental in Kirk's career and Dirk's career. Mm-hmm. And but also Dirk didn't want to do a tone deaf performance mm-hmm. because of the situations that were taking place in our country. So he wanted to do Pride in the Name of Love by U2. Mm-hmm. And it's a very special song. And he wanted to do it with the Warren Treaty and a couple other performers and mm-hmm. artists. And we agreed. This was our first time dealing with anyone in the country music world of that stature. And we did that performance and people loved it. It meant so much. One of the artists that loved it was our beloved Miranda Lambert.
Yeah.
So Miranda said, I want to write with y'all. So we went to Miranda's studio. Her and Jesse Fraser. Mm-hmm. And Jesse was playing tracks and Miranda was listening. And it was so amazing because she was like, we got to find the right thing. Because Miranda wanted us to go have a real legit country chance.
Right.
And she passed up several tracks. I was like, she was like, nope, that's not it. Mm-hmm. Now, we're both older than Miranda, but Miranda cradled us mm-hmm. in that studio session.
Yeah,
see, people don't get a chance to see the side first.
No, you really don't.
In that studio.
Miranda, Tanya, and I wrote this song. Yeah. And so now I'm going to read you what I wrote. Mm-hmm. We met Miranda Lambert during the pandemic in 2021. Dirk Bentley had invited us to perform with him on the ACMs. She saw that performance and reached out to tell us that she dug it. And the rest was history. We set a date to write one together, and we never thought in a million years our session with the baddie would be so life-changing. Miranda is a stone-cold beast in the studio, and she is straight liquor with no chaser. We sat down and listened to a few tracks until something jumped out at her for us. And it was funny how, even though we had just met, we trusted her so quickly. Even though we are older than her, she had a way of putting us both under her wings and warming us up to the idea of country radio. She kept saying things like, y'all, this is fire. We kept feeling it too. We drank, sang,
drank
again, sang some more, and drank more. And I started feeling like love, like whiskey, was filling the room.
Yeah.
That's how that song mm-hmm. came about. Mm-hmm. It was the three of us. So thank you, Miranda. Now we're just trying to make sure that we let the label do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Universal, if you don't do what you're going to do, you need to. That is amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Wow, that just unpeeled a whole layer of Miranda Lambert for me too.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't see that side of her.
Nope.
And no one talks about it.
No, and she's an incredible song.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, it was a dream come true.
I'm a producer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And vocal producer.
Yeah.
She was the one telling us, no, do this, do that.
She was like, no, at the end, you need to. She was like, bring it. Come on now, at the end. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
Miranda's. Okay, Tanya, I'll go on record and say this. She's the best I've seen in the studio. Her work ethic, everything that she says and does is intentional. With whiskey in her hand or tequila.
Tequila.
Yeah.
She has that Miranda Rita. She loves her Miranda Ritas.
Yes.
Mm. And we've been friends ever since. In fact, when I started doubting myself, because I produced this next record.
Yeah.
But you produced Hearthstone too.
Yes, I did. Thanks, honey. Mm-hmm. When I started doubting myself and doubting if we had a place in country music mm-hmm. radio, mm-hmm. country music, I called Miranda. And she didn't answer. She was busy. And she texted me. Are you okay? What do you need? You need anything? I'm doing something. I can call you in 5. I said, you know, if I got Miranda Lambert telling me that she will pause what she's doing and call me in five, you take that call. You tell her, yeah, call me in five. And she called me and I told her, Miranda, I'm having it today. And when I say straight liquor, no chaser, here's her response. What are you talking about? This is your moment. This is your time. And you run the show. You tell them this is what, and let me tell you something else about your career. This site, and it wasn't no chaser. It wasn't time for her to lick my wounds. It's okay. You know what I mean? No. Miranda's like, listen, get your ball, put your boots on, pull your pants up.
Don't play, mom.
Go play or go the fuck home.
That's it.
I was like,
okay.
And if you need me to give you another kick in the ass, call me. That's who I am. I was like, oh, that's the coach.
Yep.
She's the coach.
Yeah.
She is the coach. And country music doesn't know that. They don't know that because many artists, they take advantage of that moment. Mm-hmm. They get the wisdom and they sit down and they say, yeah, I'm Miranda, let me help me. But they don't go into the details of how deep and how passionate and how powerful she really is. So I'm very grateful for that relationship.
Yes.
All right, I got one more question. What do you guys think at the end of your career? What do you want your impact to be on country music?
That's an awesome question. Go ahead, baby. You first.
Okay, so at the end of your career,
you looking forward 20 years from now?
I want to be able to have a conversation where you're not having a conversation about skin color. It's just a damn good song.
Oh,
That's it. I want to be able to have artists.
Yep.
Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. If you grew up in this country and you want to do country music, I want you to be able to do it and not be have anything to do with what you look like. It's your talent.
It's the talent and it's the music.
And it's the music. And that's it.
Okay.
And I'm charging the fans.
Yes.
Because the fans are responsible.
Correct.
I want to be able to sit back and look at the fans and look at a sea of people of different cultures loving country music.
I want to be a part of the Johnny and June legacy to where we're the first African-American married duo in country music and we lasted. I want to be able to look my wife in the face. I've said this to her in life.
Yeah.
When I close my eyes, I want to be able to look at her and say, we did it. Even if I'm closing my eyes to leave this world, I want to look at her and I want to say to her, was I honest? Did I love you? Did I do all the things? Did I live up to your expectation? Mm-hmm. Because I'm living, I'm singing, I'm breathing for Tanya.
Mm-hmm.
This is the truth. And then I want to be able to look at the scope of what we're leaving and be able to say, we did it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all that matters to me is were we true to the music? Were we true to ourselves? Were we true to the mission, which is unifying our audiences?
Mm-hmm. And were we true to our family?
And that's it.
You know, our kids can look at us away from this.
Right. Well, this is mine. This is what I want in 20 years. You know, I'm not even thinking of my babies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if I do what I'm saying in 20 years, that comes with it.
Correct.
I'm looking at the legacies of June and Johnny. They're side by side, even right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're resting places side by side.
Right next to each other.
And people visit to say, thank you for your contribution. Thank you for not giving up. Thank you for not quitting. Thank you for being examples of what true love really is.
Like
it's the ups, the downs, the ins and the outs. I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can get that, forget a hit record, forget a number one, forget all that. If I can end my career with that, that's heaven for me.
Wow. Well, this has been another episode of Spoken Section Podcast and Country Line TV with the one, the only, the badass, the Warren Treaty. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.